I was doing the chat the other night on Coast Insider, as I get to do about every 2 or 3 months or so. And somebody asked me, said, where's your intro? You're the only host on Coast to Coast that doesn't have a cool intro. Well, I used to. I just forgot mine. So I wrote it down here somewhere. I'll get back to doing it again someday. But thanks again for everybody else that signed up in that chat last Wednesday night. Good time. Go back and read that if you're in a Coast Insider. And if you're not, you should become one. CoastToCoastAM.com is where you can sign up. It's Coast to Coast with Ian Punnett. And there's so much to get to tonight. Coming up next hour, we'll talk with a woman who says that your grocery bills are probably going to double in 2011. Well, all right, wait a second. She says they will double in 2011. I'm adding the probably in there. And she's got the antidote. Grow your own stuff. Feed your family on the property that you have. Now, a lot of people want to do that, and they plan someday, should there be some sort of nuclear apocalypse, in some dystopian universe, how would they get by? And they think that's the time they'll get around to doing it. That would probably be too late. But she says it's easier than you think. And when it comes to eggs, when it comes to livestock, when it comes to especially vegetables and fruit, you can do it. And she's going to talk to us more about that coming up next hour. Plus, this spike in the grocery bills, which she says is coming in 2011. We'll find out more about that coming up on Coast to Coast. This first hour was a no-brainer for me. Somebody asked me if I wanted to talk to Cy Kernan, lead singer of The Fix, who's also got a nice reputation as a solo performer in his own right. Well, sure, duh. I don't know about you and new wave music. I thought a lot of new wave was just image over substance, and the image wasn't all that great. You know, it was a lot of sizzle, but not a lot of steak, except when it came to certain bands, The Fix being one of them. And were it not for bands like The Fix that brought a lot to the music they were doing in the early to mid 80s, this new wave writer never would have reached the beach. So we'll talk with Cy Kernan coming up, who also does a little bit of the self-sustaining farming on the way, too. And we'll get a couple of calls in from him and find out just what he's up to. Very interesting. Coming up next to get the show started on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. It is a distinct pleasure to talk with Cy Kernan, former lead singer of The Fix, and also still performing and still trying to save the world. So always, anytime you can talk to somebody who's mounting an effort to save the world, we got to give them some pub time on Coast to Coast. Good evening, Cy.
Good evening, Ian. How are you?
For the years and 50 years of great rock and roll music, or 60 years, one thing leads to another remains in my top 10. I think it's a great song. I listen to it all the time.
Great. Yeah, well, it was just one of those songs that came out of nowhere. I feel very much like the messenger on that one. I wasn't quite sure what I was saying at the time, but as the years have gone by and I've heard different people's interpretations of the lyrics, I'm starting to realize there was some kind of hidden message in there that you and I would discover later on, and maybe it's the song that's coming of age.
Well, you know what? It's interesting you should mention that, because I've always had my argument for what I thought the lyrics to One Thing Leads to Another is about, and I think it always seemed to me about arguing. It always seemed about just a fight in a relationship, how one thing leads to another, and that's how it struck me. Maybe that's a common or uncommon interpretation, I don't know. But whenever I bring that up around other people, a lot of them go, oh, yeah, I can see that. But where does that rank in the...
Yeah, I guess in a way, I think at the time there had been some politician that had been really busted for lying. And I remember thinking that, you know, if you want to be a good liar, then you've got to at least have a good memory. He kind of forgot what he'd said 6 months before.
Well, that's good. Actually, it's funny you should mention. I hadn't really ever thought about it in terms of politics. I always think all that stuff about how things then get frozen in a relationship after one thing leads to another, and I used to even it actually sort of gave me insight for this. This again, it comes down to then interesting how an interpretation can can have nothing to do with the original inspiration, but can still be good. And I remember thinking the lyrics to that song got me rethinking how I ever wanted to have an argument in a relationship, you know, because I just didn't want anything that how things do just escalate so fast. But now I'll have to rethink it all.
I think about, you know, if you want to have a good argument, then you've got to really be a good listener.
Right.
If you're going to answer the person in the right way and not eventually win, but take the wind out of the sails of what's coming at you, you've got to at least listen and know how to attack it.
Well, very good. Now, I mentioned that next hour on Coast to Coast, we're going to talk to a woman about sustaining farming practices and about being, you know, self-sustaining in a way, too, for one's family and what you can do to actually what you can and can't do to raise your own food and what the limitations are and some tips on stuff like that. Because there's a lot of people who think about doing that, but apparently you are already do that to a point.
I am indeed. Yeah. I mean, you could say it was not dumb luck that I ended up where I am, but it was thanks to my wife who, I met her in New York just in 1999, and we were partying like it was 1999. And then she decided, she's French, so she decided to go back to France. And after a while, I followed her. This is after 9/11 and all this stuff had happened. And I just started to have strange dreams or feelings that I wasn't really in control of my life in the short term anymore, let alone the long term. And as you said earlier, trying to save the world, well, it was at least just trying to get some sense in my own world first. So she went back to France, and somebody gave her an old sheep, and she discovered what she wanted to do with the rest of her life, which was to make goat's cheese. And she went back to school to learn how to do that. Then she persuaded me to buy some land. And then I started doing the figures, and I was thinking, hold on a minute, this isn't going to really bring in much money, and I'm going to be doing all the milking. I could see that coming.
You knew that coming down.
Right. So I decided we'd fix up these old rotten buildings that were around the farm, and we turned it into a guest house, which was a lot more fun. Then I realized we had all this land around, and we better put some animals and plant a few vegetables around to make the people that were coming think that it was a working farm. But it wasn't that easy. Once you've got the animals, you've got to take care of them. There's a commitment there. And they breed. And I started to sort of get information from the locals, and I realized it wasn't that hard to start raising your own meat. And if you were feeding them organically, then we could serve that at the table and say that we were serving the guests organic meat, and that escalated. People were coming because of the kind of food we were serving. And then there were vegetables that I started planting, and, you know, I was just basically learning by mistake. And I think if I can do it, you know, a rock and roller city kid, basically at heart, finds himself in the middle of nowhere in France planting vegetables. And lo and behold, if you do the right things, they come out of the ground. Slowly but surely, the world has hit. You know, the critical mass is now stating that there's a lot of people waking up to the undeniable facts that the system can't sustain us in the way that we're living. And the only way that we can really continue is to take care of the ground right in front of you. Where your next foot falls is where you should be looking for food, too. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there that have written some very interesting books. And recently I saw the film Collapse by Michael Rupert. And that kind of was a real wake-up call, too. And I could see that some of the things that he was talking about, especially in the conclusion of his film, were things that I'd, you know, even just without thinking, these were steps that had presented themselves in my life. So I feel like I've got a guardian angel taking care of me and steering me into the path that's going to be facing a lot more people. And he pointed out that Cuba seemed to be the most effective form of capitalism, even though it's very raw and very simple. But I think Castro said to all the people there, if you find a piece of land with nothing you can eat growing on it, plant something you can eat. And I think we'll be telling that to our own citizens of a lot of that countries fairly soon.
Well, that may be true. I mean, I have some strong feelings about Cuba in that I have some family members who came from Cuba, and that the way that I think that what they are oddly enough it was imposed upon them to be in survivor mode, and so they've been in survivor mode for a lot longer perhaps than anybody else. And, you know, maybe that's a model for how we're supposed to live in the future. I think it would be better if one were to be in that place by choice as opposed to, you know, at the end of the barrel of a gun.
Choice is good, but doesn't a good parent teach its child to leave home and be self-sufficient?
Yes.
And I think that, you know, as soon as the government tells its citizens what to do, maybe there's government control and Big Brother. But if there's a kind of a collective knowledge that can be shared, then there's a kind of an education there too. I mean, I don't want to get into the political side of it, but it's just basic human sense that somebody's found fruit up the hill and he wants to tell the rest of his tribe that there's fruit up the hill, he's going to pass on the message.
Right. You know, well, so, and I think that's the, and hopefully then more people will look at the ground that's underneath their feet and realize they could be doing more with it. And how much and what more of that, I know we'll be getting into more of it coming up next hour, but tell me before we change the subject, what's the most rewarding thing for you now as a goat farmer cheesemonger?
That it tastes really great and I don't have to go to the supermarket and I don't see barcodes on my meat anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, that one calorie that goes in my mouth is just sweat equity, not 10 calories of oil energy to bring it to my plate.
Well, and when you were first starting off with your schoolmates forming a band and dreaming of rock and roll riches, did you ever think you'd end up raising goats in France?
No way. No way. Yeah. No way. It's just, you know, you arrive at things sometimes and... You know, at my age, I'm not questioning anymore. I'm just sort of following signs. I think there are signs that come to you left and right, and you just have to start listening to the greater picture. Through the chaos is the way forward. And I'm not saying I know the way forward for everyone. I've just decided to just take care of me and my family first. And then I would share my experiences with other people, and if it gives them confidence and encouragement to take it for themselves too, then all the better.
No, I love that. We're talking with Cy Kernan of The Fix, who's also now still performing and raising money and awareness. And we'll talk about the music-based cancer charity that you're part of too, and some of the performances that other people can see coming up as you leave the goat farm to come to the United States, correct?
Correct, yes. Back when before, with my carbon imprint's a little bit more than I like right now.
Well, it's okay. But when you did start off, I mean, here you were just like anybody else, right? Growing up, and you saw who would have been the first, the Beatles, or the first time you saw a band and went, I want to do that.
Yeah, they would have been on Top of the Pops, Rolling Stones. I had an older sister who was about 4.5 years older than me. She was going off to concerts and bringing in albums into the house. So I was getting my education through her. And then when I saw, I think my first concert was David Bowie in like 1969.
Wow.
At a local swimming club.
Wow.
And I was just more, it was just the gathering of people and the way they were all, the look on their faces, they were staring at the stage and the volume of the music. It wasn't hurting my ears, but it was just so big. And I just thought, wow, I want to do that.
Right. And were you playing yet?
Yeah, I was jamming around on the piano. I didn't know, you know, I was just speaking in tongues. I just knew it felt really great when I stopped. All this stuff was coming out. And then I started doing it in the music room at school, and the music teacher said, you know what, you can come in whenever you like. So I kind of started off like that.
Oh, that's good. And then, like so many other bands, it was just you started falling in with guys you were going to school with who were having the same dream?
Yeah. In fact, it was, again, my older sister was dating a drummer who had a band.
Cy?
Yeah, I'm here. They had a band at college. Uh-oh. Can you hear me? Hello?
I can't tell if, Jesse?
Yeah, I can hear you. All good here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hello?
Hello, Ian. Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me? Hello?
Something's gone down with the line. I'm just going to keep talking here.
Just keep talking, but I'm here.
Jesse? Anybody? Gina? Everything went dark.
You're in a pod. You've been kidnapped.
Okay, and I'm sorry, I had a dropout there a little bit in my audio, so I missed a little bit of that, and I'm sorry if I threw you off by disappearing for the moment.
No, I was responding to your panic call out for help. Hello!
Good. Thank you. There. I don't know what happened, and just suddenly you were right in the middle of saying something so interesting, and then I was the only one talking. So
yeah, no, I was just saying that my sister was going out with a drummer.
Right.
She was in a band. She was 4 years older than me. I went to see the band, and I thought their song sucked, so I kind of barged my way in. And I was, you know, 4 years their junior. In those days, 4 years was a big age difference, but I didn't really care. And they accepted me into their midst, and I'm still playing with that same drummer today. That's Adam Woods, who's the drummer in The Fix. I've been playing with him since I was 13. And he's kind of mentored me, tells me when what I do is crap, and tells me when what I do is good. So it's always good to have an editor in your midst, you know?
Yeah, what's the crap to good ratio these days?
I don't know. It's ever was 10 to 1 in favor of crap, but, you know, you have to keep putting it out.
Yeah, you'll find out what's good. So you got, you know, the interesting thing about this, about The Fix, if I can, and then, you know, here I am telling you about your career, so jump in anywhere this is wrong. But I was a disc jockey for years before I was given the great opportunity to get into talk radio. In fact, I was actually jamming talk radio into the music radio that I was working for. So taking longer and longer breaks and doing longer and longer interviews. But I loved The Fix. And I thought that you all had something that a lot of the other new wave bands didn't have. And you had a real nice kind of new wave vibe to you all, but it wasn't, you weren't crutching on the gimmickry of the new wave music genre.
The kind of fashion period that we found ourselves in was just, you know, happenstance. We weren't really paying too much attention to it. But the collection of guys, as the band formed, everyone had a particular sound. Jamie, the guitarist, has a unique sound and way of playing. And when you marry that with Rupert, his keyboard style also is very unique to him. The two of them created this huge ethereal soundscape that wasn't very busy.
And it was
huge. So I could just throw up a few lyrical ideas like parachutes, and they would just float up there like flares, and the enigma would just be hanging around for ages. And then you just put a kind of a good beat behind it, and you had these tunes that just pushed aside the confusion or rattle that was around it and just gave a little kind of injection of stillness, I think. And people back then, maybe they were in college, their lives were full of hope and they were young, full of adrenaline and hormones and everything else, but the messages were going in. And it's maybe today when they hear them again, I mean, I hear Saved by Zero all over the place and people kind of go, oh, I finally get it, you know. And
right,
there are a lot of people start to quote that song in a financial term.
Interesting.
I didn't really write it in that term, but I just wrote it from the point of view that the emptier you are, the fuller you can feel, in a way.
Right.
Something that a book I'd read, I don't know, something else, it's called The Experience of Nothingness, and it really connected with me. So that song went out there, and, you know, in the 80s, it was all credit cards and bing, bang, boom, and excess, and loving it. But now that the lights have gone out and it's all cold, that song is kind of there like a little candle, just going, maybe there's some reason. And I'm just discovering that message for myself, too. You know, it's kind of speaking to me as much as it is to anyone else.
Well, I love that. And it Saved by Zero, one thing leads to another, Red Sky, Stand or Fall,
yeah.
Sign of Fire, and several other songs which got a lot of, in the United States anyway, got a lot of rock album play as opposed to necessarily top 40 play.
Yeah.
But a corpus of which you should be very proud.
I am proud of it. You know, I think, you know, looking back, I had the luck to grow up with a very interesting father. He was the kind of guy that would, he'd either be full sunshine or dark clouds. He was a political scientist, and if he happened to see something good going on, he was in good mood. And if he was sensing something bad that was coming along inside, he'd be in foul mood.
Well, it sounds like he'd fit in very well on this show, Coast to Coast. So hang on, we'll get more with Cy Kernan, lead singer of The Fix. They're going to be touring. Well, sorry, he's going to be touring coming up. We'll tell you about that in just a minute. We'll also throw up the phone numbers for you, and we'll talk a little bit more about why The Fix has been in the news lately, too. On Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. I don't know how many calls we'll get on for Cy Kernan, but a few anyway before the top of the hour. And then we'll talk with Marjorie Wildcraft coming up next hour about self-sustaining farming. How much property do you need to be able to sustain you? What would you be able to grow? What do you need to plan on? And I'm going to throw another question in there. Do you need a gun to garden? Do you need a gun to garden? Marjorie Wildcraft on that coming up next hour, too. But first, more with Cy Kernan. He was just talking about his dad a little bit. We'll go back and we'll explore that. And then also your calls. And I'm going to throw that question at him, too. As a self-sustaining farmer, as somebody that is working on, you know, creating the very food on which his family dines every night, and, you know, the meat, the cheese, the everything, trying to raise it all himself. Do you need a gun to garden in France, which is where Cy Kernan lives on Coast to Coast, next with Ian Punnett. Like I promised, we'll get at least a couple of Fix fans coming up here for Cy Kernan before the top of the hour on Coast to Coast. And then it's Marjorie Wildcraft next hour. On the conversation of self-sustaining farming and all of the things that she's worked out in a DVD that you can find out more about if you click onto our website at coasttocoastam.com. You can also find out more about Cy Kernan. Let me ask you, Cy, about this tour coming up. You're going to be coming back to the United States. You're going to be playing at a couple of select dates, yeah, but with a pretty cool roster of people.
That's right. Yeah, I've got a show up in Aspen on April 2nd. It's the John Oates kind of Songwriters in the Round series that he does. I think the Sean Colvin and Glenn Tilbrook from Squeeze will be joining me, and Miles from Fastball, and a few other guys that I can't quite remember right now.
But yeah,
it should be a fun thing. And you know, I'll be there talking up Love, Hope, Strength as well. They're just down the road. The headquarters is just down the road in Denver, so they'll be there in full. And they're trying to get their bone marrow campaign really, you know, in front of the greater public, so we can get that rolling.
Talk about that cancer charity a little bit more, so just so people know what you're up to.
Yeah, it's called Love, Hope, Strength. It was started by Mike Peters, who is a guy that's been fighting with leukemia for a few years. He couldn't get rock and roll insurance to come and tour once they found out that he had leukemia. And he found a rock and roll insurer called James Chippendale in the States, who also was a leukemia survivor. He'd had the harder case where he'd had to have a full bone marrow transplant, and the two of them took that as a sign that they should do something to alert the world to the disease and get early detection machines in place in countries that they can't afford even a loaf of bread, stuff like that. So let's go and sing the message from the highest points on the globe, said Mike. So off we went to Everest, and I did a concert at close to 19,000 feet at the top of Kalapatar, and it was the most incredible experience of my life. And indeed, everyone else that was there, there were 38 people, cancer survivors, musicians, sponsors, whole gamut of people. And we all went up there and we all left something up there. I think it was the kind of weight of excuse that your life is just, you know, you just got to live in society without being able to help in any way. So we kind of just went up there and came back free.
Hmm. Where'd you leave?
And then we've been to Kilimanjaro since, and Machu Picchu. Probably going back to Everest again next year to celebrate the 5 years since we did the first one.
What did you leave up on Everest?
A lot of weight. A lot of in my head.
Okay. You can't say that one. Sorry. That's all right.
I've been shoveling it for so long, I thought it was part of the lexicon these days.
Yeah, I understand. But and they may perhaps, you know, use that in the sustainable farming of the FCC, but we wouldn't have it on the air.
Excuse me.
That's okay. Jesse, I'm assuming we're good with that. So okay. So that was good. So when the things that you left up there are things that you were carrying around other than, say, you know, a tin soldier or something from your pocket.
Exactly. Well, we left a lot of prayer flags, the names of people that have died of cancer, loved ones, And they were there just passing the names into the wind. And these prayer flags just, with the wind, just dissolve into the air eventually, and the names just go off into the spirit world, I suppose. So it's it was a beautiful symbol.
I love that.
And a lot of people setting free. And I think, you know, for some of the cancer survivors, they live in fear every day that the cancer is going to come back. And there they are embarking on a huge journey for them. You know, they're physically not sure if they're strong enough, and then they're dealing with the altitude, and you get a lot of people vomiting and headaches and stuff like that. But they made it to the top, and that sword of Damocles just disappeared, and they were no longer survivors. They were actually living again. And that to me was the richest gift.
Sure, that's great.
It was awesome.
That's a good way of looking at how one way we can fix things. But how about a reference to some people said The Fix was a reference to the band's drug habits. I remember that. I'm sure you've heard that rumor at the time. Oh yeah, The Fix. These are guys. Either the rumor I heard was, or maybe it's just a story, but that you all were recovering drug addicts and this was your new fix, but that The Fix had a reference to getting a fix.
Yeah, you know, it was just from our point of view, it was just a reference to your focus. What are you going to set your sights on? What was that? What was going to be our goal? Which, of course, we were 20 years old. We just wanted to eat the world up.
Right.
Go and change the world. And then the record company said, you know, this name, The Fix, it sounds, has a lot of drug connotations. Let's put another X on it, and people won't think that anymore.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I said, well, it sounds the same, so I didn't really care. You know, in a way, it kind of graphically worked, and I see a lot of people have started putting double X's on the end of their names, too, now. So I said, okay, great, we started something there.
And yet, if you'd put a third X on it, everybody would have thought it was porn.
Yeah, there you go.
You found just the right number of X's.
That's it, yeah.
All right, we'll get to a couple of calls for Cy Kernan here in just a second. Let me ask you about that one question I'm going to throw out at Marjorie Wildcraft, the woman who is an advocate and a teacher, an instructor on self-sustaining farming. She answers the question, do you need a gun to garden? And so I throw it out at you. Is that something in France? I know that their gun laws are much different than they are in the United States anyway, but is that something that ever comes up?
Yeah, it is actually. I mean, the hunting laws are quite liberal over there. You have a permit and you can go and hunt pheasant, rabbit, wild boar, deer, pretty much the same as you can here. And, you know, if you're rearing your own meat, it's nice to eat a little bit of wild game now and then. But I think the connotation of the question therein lies is that if you're running a small holding and the system breaks down and there are a lot of hungry people roaming around out there and they start to come and steal your food, are you going to be able to protect yourself and your family with one gun?
Yes.
A horde of starving people. I don't think you can. You could probably pop one or two warning shots off, but I think it's probably better to just open a soup kitchen and just try and feed as many people, get them on your side, and then they can defend you.
Wouldn't that be nice? Good. Well, I like the sound of that. We'll see what I have a feeling I know what her answer is, and we'll get to that coming up on Coast to Coast. You want to talk to some fans?
Yeah, I'd love to.
All right. Well, this is Steve from Houston for Cy Kernan of The Fix on Coast to Coast. Steve?
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen.
Evening, Steve.
Hey, giant fan of you guys, both of you, actually. And Mr. Kernan, you know, listening to your music over the years, there's a saying that all great art works on multiple levels. And when I was much younger in the 80s, listening to the band's music, it was all great, sounded good. And then as I've matured and developed spiritually, the lyrics take on a very different meaning, and it works even better than it did before. Yeah. And so one of the things I'm wondering is, like, in Secret Separation, obviously there's a lot of reincarnation overtones to it.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on reincarnation, and is this something that progressed with the development of the band, or did you have these ideas before the band started?
Well, they kind of were just ideas that I was toying with throughout my life, and that, you know, from reading books, you're exposed to different experiences through other people's words. Just from the basic system is you're put in the ground, your body rots, but it feeds new life. So there's a kind of obvious form of reincarnation there. If you happen to believe that your spirit then goes through various stages in order to come back to learn more lessons, to come back, to learn more lessons, to come back, to learn more lessons. And eventually you've learned all the lessons that are to be learned on this planet, and then you will just become light. Some people have put forward that theory. I found that a very charming way to live through the illusions of just the blackness.
And the blackness refers to?
Just nihilism and nothing.
Had you gone through that? Did you experience that in your life?
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have just periods where you doubt so much, and you believe, and you're asking for signs, and they don't come, and you just momentarily give up hope, but not for long. I must say that I've been quite lucky that hope always comes along over the hill and saves me.
Love that. We have Jeff in Elk, California, for Cy Kernan on Coast to Coast. Jeff?
Hi Ian, and Cy, I promise I won't mention anything that comes out of an elk. And
thank you.
I had the privilege of providing T-shirts to the Fix in 1989 when they played at the University of Redlands in California, what we called Exxon T-shirts, which modified the Exxon logo into the international no symbol, kind of quadrupled. And there was that double X aspect, and you guys all tore the sleeves off and wore it on stage. And I tell you, that was the highlight of my life. I really want to thank you guys for doing that night.
That's cool. Hang on. Si, do you remember that?
I do, yeah. Yeah, what we'll do for a clean T-shirt. When you're on the road, there's nothing like a piece of clean laundry.
I knew there was a good reason for it, but I always appreciated you guys in basically a vast carpet of musical similarity. You guys really stood out, and
yeah.
Stand or Fall was one of my favorites, which applies to a lot of things going on tonight, the revolutions around the world, all the way to what I call mad as hell Pistconson, the folks there really standing up for their labor rights. And I believe that's what that song is about. Was there a specific occurrence that led to the writing of that song? And thanks again for wearing those Exxon shirts.
Yes, my pleasure. Well, yeah, if I recall correctly, back then Reagan and Thatcher were having their little powwow about a limited nuclear warfare. And Europe was the theater where this limited little nuclear war could be, where the superpowers would sort out their beef. And I was just feeling so impotent. Because there we were. They were talking about our land and our lives as if we didn't exist. And I just felt that we really had to sort of stand up and be counted in a way. And for me, the way to do that was through music. But okay. I was tickled pink the other day was when Mubarak's regime was tumbling. I think the Drudge Report used Stand or Fall as a slogan under a picture of the pyramids. They had it up there for 3 days. I was like, whoop-de-doo. But I don't think I could take credit for the full phrase. It has been around in the language for a long time, and it was kind of a stiff upper lip, and, you know,
Right, but you freshened it. I think you gave it a generational reset,
put it that way.
You gotta take that whenever you can. In fact, what would be your favorite references to your music where something from The Fix has been used either in pop culture, in a movie, you know, as part of a news package?
Yeah,
anything else?
I think there was... an English professor using Letter to Both Sides in one of his courses, and he ran it for 3 or 4 years, and it was kind of required reading for the students. I was like, wow.
No, that's cool.
You know, and it was a kind of a bipartisan way, but he was showing people that you have to write, and you have to be vocal, and you have to let people know you exist if you want to be heard. You know?
I love that. Now, this is weird. We're going to go from Jeff in Elk, California, who we just had on, to Jeff from Elk Grove, California,
wow,
on Coast to Coast. Jeff from Elk Grove. You're a different Jeff, correct?
As far as I know, I am. How are you,
Ian? And it's a different elk. I'm assuming the same elk? Okay, maybe it's the same elk.
I don't know. They might wander quite a ways. I don't know.
You're talking with Cy Kernan. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hey, that's really great. Cy, thanks a lot for coming on tonight. It's a lot of fun to hear you.
My pleasure, man.
And what an amazing thing you accomplished with The Fix. And I just have kind of a more general question, and that is, in terms of your career with the band, what would you consider to be maybe the high point for you personally, and maybe what might be the lower point for you in terms of your career in the band?
Right. Well, the high point for me right now is that we've just managed to record a new record, and I think it's probably the best thing that we've ever done. done, but I would say that. But it really is, because I think we've finally understood what our calling is. And to have a relationship with these guys for over 30 years and see the world, you know, the way it's been through, we've seen cycles come and revolutions go. And to be able to still write actively against that backdrop is a thrill. The lowest points in my career are probably just realizing how many dumb mistakes I've made. We could have peaked a little further. We could have gone a little further at certain times that we didn't. For example, not doing the Live Aid show in the States when we were invited to. Our manager says, no, you've got to go and finish the record.
Okay, that was dumb.
Very, very dumb, I thought. So,
yeah.
You know, it was one of those moments. So, you know, live, love, laugh, eh?
Yeah, no, I get that. Actually, let me push you a little further on that, too, because that would seemingly have been something that fit very well into your personal philosophy and kind of what you're still doing to this day.
It really did, and I felt like my hands were tied, but the record company and management were really, you know, saying, we got to get this record out within a month, and the budget was this. And to top it off, personally, my wife was just about to drop our first son. And so I kind of maybe selfishly thought, what if the baby comes out when I'm over there?
Right.
So my decision, you know, I didn't think clearly. I wasn't as sharp on my game as I could have been. I should have been really brutally honest and just gone.
Oh, well.
But, you know.
Well, actually, certainly with the wife part, that complicates everything. So I don't know that you made the wrong decision there. But that, I mean, you got to be around a little bit. And I think that might have. You may have erred on the side of caution. Did she end up having the baby on the weekend of Live Aid after all?
No, she didn't. She it was 15 days late.
Okay, well, never mind that. All right. But, okay, and when it came to the band, you know, The Fix, I know like some bands, you know, some people say, well, they never really break up or we get back together again from time to time or who knows when we'll put out another album or whatever. And I know that you all, you remain friends. But what is that experience like when a band that had been successful stops getting a record deal or you stop wanting to do the deal you have?
Yeah, well, it's very real. You know, you kind of, it's feast or famine, this business. And I think that if you can accept the rejection and get on with it and really analyze why you're doing it in the first place, which is for yourself and the reasons you got into it, beginning were, you know, that you didn't know what the future was. As soon as you start second guessing what the future is, your art's going to suffer. I mean, art, parentheses.
Right.
You've got your eye off the ball then. You should be really looking into inside and doing it there first and then applying it. So, you know, you come off the road and musical taste change. I think for us, sort of by the end of 1991, grunge was coming in and radio stations weren't so hot to hear what we had to say or what the next record was. And that's life. You know, you're kind of either you're going to stand the pressure and keep going. And we took a couple of years off because a lot more children were born at that period. And we had to spend the money that we'd made.
So, right.
But we kept the friendship going. And by 94, 95, we were making records again. You know, we'd just been off in a dark orbit. But I think right now we have a new record coming out in May called Beautiful Friction. Like I said, I'm so proud of it. I can't wait for people to hear it.
Will you make sure you get a copy of that in our hands?
Oh, I will do.
And, you know, we'd love to be able to pop on something from that and continue this conversation with you sometime in the future. Does that sound like something you'd be willing to do?
Yeah, I'd love to. You know, and now with all the social media and stuff, people can hit us up on Facebook and they can find us and they can see what's going on. And it's, you know, we're just around the corner.
Well, I hope that they do that. They can start by linking up to Cy Kernan through coasttocoastam.com and to take a look at the touring schedule. If you happen to be around Aspen in that first week of April, that'll be a show worth catching. And this will be a show worth telling other people about who are Fix fans so they can go back and listen to it. Thank you so much, Cy.
My pleasure, Ian. A real pleasure.
No, really, thank you so much for your candid answers and the conversation, and I look forward to having a fix of you again sometime in the future. God bless you. Thank you so much. And coming up, Marjorie Wildcraft on self-sustaining gardening. You can, with some interesting asterisks, next on Coast to Coast.